When a stranger offends us and we're charged with something we didn't do, we feel a measure of rejection. But when false accusations come from our own community, well, the words cut deeply and it's difficult to forgive. Imagine then what it was like for the Son of God, the light of the world, to be rejected by His people. Today on Insight for Living, Chuck Swindoll is teaching from John chapter 18. In this passage, we witness the horrific trials of Jesus and the injustices leveled against Him. Chuck titled today's message, Rush to Judgment.
During Jesus' years of ministry, He revealed Himself as the Son of God, who had come as the light of the world. However, as John wrote, the world did not recognize Him. And when He came to His own people, even they rejected Him. We read of that in John 1, verses 10 and 11. John's fateful words became harsh reality in the six trials of Jesus, in which we're able to see both the world's inability to recognize Jesus for who He was and the Jews' rejection of their Messiah and King. In the previous message, we examined Jesus' first two trials. They were before Annas and Caiaphas. Now, in this message, we'll continue with the third trial before the Sanhedrin. Then we'll walk with Jesus through His final trials before Pilate, Herod, and then finally, for the last time again, before Pilate. I'm going to read portions from Matthew, Luke, and John, which describe Jesus' final four trials. Now, as I read, I want you to place yourself in the scenes, and I want you to feel the drama. Let's begin with Luke chapter 22, verse 66. At daybreak, all the elders of the people assembled, including the leading priests and the teachers of religious law. Jesus was led before this high council, and they said, "Tell us, are you the Messiah?" But He replied, "If I tell you, you won't believe me. And if I ask you a question, you won't answer. But from now on, the Son of Man will be seated in the place of power at God's right hand." They all shouted, "So are you claiming to be the Son of God?" And He replied, "You say that I am." "Why do we need other witnesses?" they said. "We ourselves heard Him say it." Then the entire council took Jesus to Pilate, the Roman governor. Now keep your finger here in Luke and turn with me to John 18 and find verse 29. Upon seeing Jesus, Pilate asked the Jewish leaders, now we begin, verse 29, "What is your charge against this man? We wouldn't have handed him over to you if he weren't a criminal," they retorted. "Then take him away and judge him by your own law," Pilate told him. "Only the Romans are permitted to execute someone," the Jewish leaders replied. This fulfilled Jesus' prediction about the way He would die. Now, for a few moments, flip back to Luke chapter 23, verse 6, and we'll pick up the account when Pilate discovers Jesus is from Galilee. "Oh, is He a Galilean?" Pilate asked. When they said that He was, Pilate sent Him to Herod Antipas, because Galilee was under Herod's jurisdiction, and Herod happened to be in Jerusalem at the time. Herod was delighted at the opportunity to see Jesus because he had heard about Him and had been hoping for a long time to see Him perform a miracle. He asked Jesus question after question, but Jesus refused to answer. Meanwhile, the leading priests and the teachers of religious law stood there shouting their accusations. Then Herod and his soldiers began mocking and ridiculing Jesus. Finally, they put a royal robe on him and sent him back to Pilate. Now, at Jesus' final appearance before Pilate, Pilate presented him to the bloodthirsty crowd who called for Jesus' death. To see this, turn with me to Matthew 27, verse 20. The leading priests and the elders persuaded the crowd to ask for Barabbas to be released and for Jesus to be put to death. So the governor asked again, "Which of these two do you want me to release to you?" The crowd shouted back, "Barabbas!" Pilate responded, "Then what should I do with Jesus, who is called the Messiah?" They shouted back, "Crucify him!" "Why?" Pilate demanded. "What crime has he committed?" But the mob roared even louder, "Crucify him!" Pilate saw that he wasn't getting anywhere and that a riot was developing. So he sent for a bowl of water and washed his hands before the crowd, saying, "I am innocent of this man's blood. The responsibility is yours." And all the people yelled back, "We will take responsibility for his death, we and our children." So Pilate released Barabbas to them. He ordered Jesus flogged with a lead-tipped whip, then turned him over to the Roman soldiers to be crucified.
You're listening to Insight for Living. To search the scriptures with Chuck Swindoll, be sure to download his Searching the Scriptures studies by going to insightworld.org/studies. And now the message called Rush to Judgment.
By the time the first two trials had ended, Jesus was bleeding and bruised, when as yet there was not really any official verdict cast upon his life. All that had transpired at the darkness, and therefore nothing would be recognized as official by the Romans until he had his audience before the Sanhedrin. Luke chapter 22 records for us in brief fashion, but perhaps the most complete of the four Gospels, what transpired at about 6 o'clock in the morning when they met in that council chamber. Literally, they met in the hall of hewn stone in the temple. And on the temple grounds, they were in to do official business. Luke tells us in 22:66 that it was day. Mark tells us it was early in the morning, 15:1. So we take it that it was right at the hour of 6 o'clock, the first hour they could meet officially, that they gathered together in their semicircle fashion, working as a group to carry out the accusation against Jesus that he was in fact guilty. Understand that the Supreme Court of the Jews was the Sanhedrin. What they discovered and declared became law. It was never up for grabs. It was never rethought. There was no such thing as going to a higher court. There was no higher court. And therefore, when the Sanhedrin met and passed final judgment, it was as the law of the Medes and the Persians. Jesus was destined to the cross. Now, just beginning reading with me along at verse 66, just follow. When it was day, the council of elders of the people assembled, both chief priests and scribes, and they led him away to their council chamber, saying, "If you are the Christ, tell us." But he said to them, "If I tell you, you will not believe. And if I ask a question, you will not answer. But from now on, the Son of Man will be seated at the right hand of the power of God." To that they responded, "Are you the Son of God then?" And he said to them, "Yes, I am." Their response, "What further need do we have of testimony? For we have heard it ourselves from his own mouth." Now, I gather from this brief account that this was the shortest of all the trials. It was definitely a matter of law from this point on that he, in their mind, was guilty. And aside from Nicodemus, who apparently acquiesced in silence, they voted unanimously to take him to Pilate. The charge was blasphemy, I remind you, but that would not stand up in a Roman court. And therefore, between the time that they dismissed and gained an audience with the governor, Pilate, they made plans to switch the accusation to treason. And they claimed that he was guilty of overthrowing the government or attempting so. You'll notice on the next verse, chapter 23, verse 1, the whole body of them arose and brought him before Pilate. Take the time to go back to John's gospel. Let's leave Luke and let's pick up this fourth trial in John chapter 18. You must now think in different tones and terms. The law is no longer the Talmud. The law now is the Roman Code of Criminal Procedure. And there were four steps that they must follow to make this an accurate court of law. We'll carry them through one by one, and because John's gospel seems to make this the clearest of the four, we'll use him. Just a moment on Pilate. Pilate was an anti-Semitic, Spain-born Gentile. He was appointed by Caesar to govern Judea. He would be what we would call the governor of the state, though they in those days had provinces. Pilate was a marked man in the minds of the Caesar and also his court in Rome because of the number of revolutions that had broken out under his rule. He had made some unwise decisions. He had murdered some Jews. He had tightened the screws of Roman requirements. He lacked diplomacy. Therefore, the state over which he served was in a turmoil. Caesar, with tacit approval, left him there as governor, but he was under investigation, as best as I'm able to discover from study, at this particular time. The political maneuverings of the empire are beyond comprehension, but the simple fact is, when the Caesar began to look askance at your work, your days were numbered. After his governing for a period of time, following the trial and death of Jesus, he was banished to Gaul, and while he was there, he died a suicide. Pilate was a very unstable man, and because of a few political maneuverings on his part, he became the governor of the province. Now, there's no love lost between the Jews and Pilate. They hate him. And it comes out time and again in the conversation and the court proceedings. Now let's follow beginning at verse 28, chapter 18. They led Jesus, therefore, from Caiaphas into the praetorium. Probably, this is the word praetorium is a general word. Probably it was at his palace where he sat in court. Or it could have been in some particular location designed for courtroom procedure. The time was probably around 6:30, 7 o'clock, somewhere like that in the morning. And it was early, John tells us. They themselves did not enter into the praetorium in order that they might not be defiled, but might eat the Passover. They were criminal in attitude, but they were extremely legal in their religion. The law, the Talmud, stated that no Jew entered a Gentile court on Passover or he would be defiled. So they stayed out of the court itself, and apparently he came out to them, verse 29, and did business. You'll find him coming out and going back, coming out and going back in continued fashion. Now, the first law of the criminal of Roman code in its procedure was accusation. That's the first thing that Pilate covered. He wanted to know, verse 29, what accusation do you bring against this man? And they answered and said to him, if this man were not an evildoer, we would not have delivered him up to you. That's a sarcastic answer. It is not an answer to the question, but it tells you their attitude. If he were not guilty, we wouldn't be here, Pilate. Pilate answered and said to them, take him yourselves and judge him according to your law. See, Pilate doesn't know that there's a capital punishment underway. He simply says, look, if it's a problem in your code, you take him and you judge him. The Jews said to him, we're not permitted to put anyone to death. Now, suddenly, that changes the whole picture. After determining the accusation, which apparently from the other Gospels they declared, he's guilty of treason, he claims to be another Caesar, he called him into his council chamber. Verse 33, Pilate therefore entered again. Remember, he went out, and now he is coming back in again into the praetorium, and he summoned Jesus. The second step in the Roman code was interrogation. After gaining an accusation, then there is interrogation. And we began to probe and search for evidence against the man. He said to him, are you the king of the Jews? Jesus answered, are you saying this on your own initiative, or did others tell you about me? Pilate answered, I'm not a Jew, am I? Your own nation and the chief priests delivered you up to me. What have you done? See, he's probing. He's seeking evidence. He wanted to know if Jesus was, in fact, in the process of overthrowing the government in Palestine. Jesus answered, verse 36, my kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, then my servants would be fighting that I might not be delivered up to the Jews. But as it is, my kingdom is not of this realm. Ah, now there's an answer. Are you trying to overthrow the government of Rome? Jesus answers, my kingdom is not of this world. I'm a king, but not of this world. If I were trying to overthrow the government, my servants would be out there in the streets fighting, carrying on a revolution. throwing torches, taking lives, storming this temple, ruining this procedure. But you don't even find my servants out there. The third process in the Roman code was defense. And now Pilate, acting on behalf of a defense attorney, begins to look at this side of Jesus. By the way, in Roman law, much like ours, and our jurisprudence is very much related to that in its deepest roots. They required a defense attorney, but you never find where Jesus was allowed that. So Pilate acted in behalf of an attorney, and he looked at it from that point of view. Verse 37, "So you are a king." Jesus answered, "You say correctly that I am a king. For this I have been born, and for this I have come into the world to bear witness to the truth. Everyone who is of the truth hears my voice." Pilate said to him, "What is truth?" It has nothing to do with the case, by the way, except in innuendo. I think it has a lot to do with Pilate's mindset. He was a very mixed up, miserable man. In a matter of months, he will be taking his own life. He is in a quandary regarding the whole area of objective, sound truth. And when he hears this king, this heavenly king, talk of truth, he just, as an aside, says, "What's truth?" And then after coming back to his senses, he goes out again to the Jews and says to them, "I find no guilt in him." The fourth step is a verdict. Accusation, interrogation, defense, and a verdict. And all four are acted out for us right here. He says, "I find no guilt." He's examined, he's looked for it, and the only thing he finds is some spiritual kingdom. And that's not going to affect or threaten Rome. And he says, he can have his thing in that spiritual kingdom. He's not guilty of treason. Now turn right quick back to Luke 23. Because Luke is the only one that records the fifth trial. It comes on the heels of the fourth. And I want to show you why it took place. Remember now, the verdict is, "I find no guilt." Now, Luke 23, beginning at verse 4, we pick up the same words. Pilate said to the chief priests and the multitudes, "I find no guilt in this man." But they kept on insisting, saying, "He stirs up the people, teaching all over Judea, starting from Galilee, even as far as this place." Now when Pilate heard the word Galilee, he had a genius idea. You see, he didn't want this case to start with. For him to pass judgment on Jesus would simply bring another revolution, he felt, and he didn't need another one in his record, especially on the thin wire in which he was hanging in the mind of Caesar. And so he heard Galilee, and he asked the question, verse 6, "Is this man a Galilean?" When he heard that, he asked whether the man was a Galilean. And when he heard that he belonged to Herod's jurisdiction, he sent him to Herod, who himself was also in Jerusalem at that time. Now you get the flow of thought here? They are in Pilate's court. They are listening to that verdict. And suddenly, Pilate, realizing that he cannot justify a guilty verdict, thinks, Galilean. And he remembers Herod Antipas is visiting in Jerusalem. And Pilate thought, well, if he's a Galilean, let's let the governor of Galilee handle this case. And so he hurries him off to Herod.
While the public sentiment toward Jesus was growing hostile, The politicians couldn't decide how to respond. Let me urge you to join us again when Chuck Swindoll continues to portray these dramatic final days of Jesus. Today's message is titled, Rush to Judgment. If you missed any portion, you can listen again online at insightworld.org. In addition to our study in the Gospel of John, you'll want to secure Chuck's biography called Jesus, the Greatest Life of All, and it's available for purchase from Insight for Living today. As his story unfolds in this latter portion of John, we're reminded that nothing hinders Jesus from accomplishing his will. Nothing is too difficult for him. Not even death can stop him. If you're listening in the United States, you can purchase your copy of Chuck's inspirational biography of Jesus by calling 1-800-772-8888 or go to insight.org. Let me clarify, while your purchase covers the cost of the book, we are especially grateful for your extra donation because it's your contributions that accomplish our mission to go and make disciples of all the nations. You can give securely online at insight.org. At Insight for Living, we have no way of knowing what pressures are weighing heavily on you today, but we have every confidence that God's Word can reach into your heart and minister in ways nobody else can. Maybe you're dealing with an impossible situation. You've run out of your own solutions. Frankly, you need a miracle. Well, John delivered a message on this topic. It's about the miraculous moment when Jesus fed the 5,000. And when you get in touch with us today, we'd be happy to send you a free copy. Now, Chuck isn't saying that you'll get a miracle by listening to this message, but he is saying that God can and does supply every need. Ask for the audio CD, An Unforgettable Dinner on the Grounds, when you call us today. If you're listening in the United States, call 1-800-772-8888 or go to insight.org/dinner. This offer is only valid in the United States. I'm Dave Spiker. Tomorrow, Chuck Swindoll continues our study called Rush to Judgment, right here on Insight for Living.
The preceding message, Rush to Judgment, was copyrighted in 1976, 1987, 2000, and 2018, and the sound recording was copyrighted in 2018 by Charles R. Swindoll, Inc. All rights are reserved worldwide. Duplication of copyrighted material for commercial use is strictly prohibited.